This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now, moving on to our next story about civil society organizations. Now, last year, when we changed governments, we entered into new unfamiliar territory. With it came a lot of different things, more freedom, but also some familiar blocks to freedom. A government that touted its cleanness and lack of corruption, but also a lot of inexperience. It's been a lot of adjustment to this new administration, but it turns out we're not alone.
So a report that was just released by Civicus, a global civil society organization alliance, took a look at the challenges that civil society has faced over the past year. And in it, they quoted Gayathri Venkateswaran from the University of Nottingham, who noted that after GE14, that civil society organizations are facing new challenges ahead, like the possibility that perhaps, you know, who knows, BN and its supporters might reassert themselves, a federal government that seems to be resistant to change, as well as trying to soothe some parts of the electorate that are perhaps in reaction to these new conversations and new freedoms, becoming in turn more fundamentalist.
She also suggested that the reason why they didn't prepare, rather CSOs, why they didn't prepare alternative strategies was because they didn't expect the G14 results and didn't come up with alternative strategies to deal with this new government. And truly, you know, who did think about this possible result? Now, I think we do have Gayathri on the line, for her thoughts on how things have progressed 10 months since GE14. She's an assistant professor at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Gayathri, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me online.
So when you were interviewed by Civicus last year, just a few weeks after GE14, you said that there was at that time a lack of clarity on how civil society would move forward in either outcome, you know, whether BN won the elections again or not. 6 months into the change in government, do you think there's a bit more stability in terms of how civil society is seeing its role here?
Well, I think that, you know, there are, you know, sort of two aspects here. One is, coming out of that May elections and finding what the direction is, given that there's been this huge change. So I think there's been some sort of like finding the footing and to have respond quickly enough because, as the government structure is being put in place to find how for such a long time we've had this kind of adversary politics with those in government. So for civil society to then say, okay, where then are the opportunities to move or shift that adversarial role to possibly a kind of or a more engaging role with the new government? So I think that's been one of the key areas of having to shift. But at the same time, actually, it's also for the government, right? Because I think that many of those in government have spent a lot of time having allies and working with those in civil society. But then, you know, for us within civil society, also looking at the government and seeing, well, maybe some of them have forgotten some of those roles and not necessarily responding in a way that allows for the civil society to participate adequately. It's not that there is no space or that the opportunities are not there. But I think that in that process of setting up the government structure, I think what is missing is the kind of clarity in the mechanism that allows for the civil society to then have that kind of meaningful engagement. So I think for both, there's been a period of, I wouldn't say soul searching necessarily, but really figuring out what this new relationship is. And I would say that with civil society, it's looking at the kind of non-governmental organizations, community groups, and not forgetting the media as well, because I think media is part and parcel of the civil society. And I think that maybe in many areas, we've not really found that what that role ought to be. And I think in some ways it's okay because I think you don't want to get too comfortable in that position. I think that we need to always understand that the role of civil society is to allow for the debates and dialogue and also to keep those in power in check. And I think that has to be the sort of like, the foundation of what the role of civil society is.
So with that said, I mean, after that period of soul searching to a degree and this sort of redefining of the role, what do you think are the key grounding factors right now that determine how effective civil society would be in the Malaysia that we're currently seeing?
Yeah, so I think one of the, important points of reflection, I think not just for me, but also everybody else, has been that we have to recognize that we are not homogeneous either, you know, we can't describe this one civil society, right? The civic space is dominated or participated by people of different backgrounds and interests. And neither is the state. The state is also not a homogeneous entity. And so what we see is that, you know, it's a jostling of interests. It's also about trying to take advantage of the period, because, you know, it's very common to hear this thing about, hey, this is a window of opportunity, so let's do something, which is the right thing to do, because, you know, you don't want to lose the sort of momentum after the change. But at the same time, you don't want to leave people out of maybe those kinds of discussions. So in a bid to try and get as much as possible of these reforms, right? I think sometimes we could also be excluding people from the process. So I think one of the, so I would say there are a couple of maybe four areas that I think are necessary. One is the information sharing, and I think that it's partly the role of the civil society, but also the government, to share as much information as possible of what this change is about and what the reforms are about, you know, which have been promised. So I think that is really critical. And I don't think that we are necessarily there in terms of making sure enough information is out there. The second is, I think, you know, again, about the civil society, maybe we don't have a common agenda. Mm. So not to say let's harmonize and have one, but I think we have to have a basic set of principles and issues that we can actually come together on. So a lot of it is still very reactionary. We're still thinking through some of these issues. The third, as I mentioned earlier, was about the mechanism, right? It's not as apparent how we can bring together different voices. We did have one opportunity, if you remember, the Institutional Reform Committee right at the start. So a lot of groups use that as a way of bringing forward some of the campaign issues, some of the reform issues. But that was also non-transparent. We don't know what actually recommendations were made from there. So that was an exception, a good process, but then the conclusion was something that we don't know what came out of it. And the last, I think, is making sure that even if we are engaging, even if civil society is engaging the government, sitting together and drafting laws or whatever, that it has to be independent. It has to remain independent of the government of the day. I think those are four areas that really would be critical to keep in mind as we think about how or what the role of civil society is.
Right. And how do you think civil society should deal with the opposition now who, well, used to be in government?
And also, I think particularly here, because a lot of we are seeing a very reactive situation where the opposition are reacting very directly and often very strongly to what the government says. And very often with strong racial and religious rhetoric. That's something that we've seen as well.
Sure. And that was one of the points that I raised also, that, you know, given the kind of uncertainty of the opposition, what are some of the things that they would do? And clearly, I mean, they've demonstrated that religion and race are tools that, you know, they still want to employ. Whether it's successful or not, we don't know. But, you know, you fall back on some of these things as a way of maybe derailing some of the changes. So I think, I guess it's very important for civil society. And again, it's very hard to label civil society as one, because, you know, it's made up of people who support the different political agendas. But I think that maybe given that there's a general sense of opening, maybe what is necessary at this point is taking some of the initiatives done by the rights-based groups, so the human rights-based groups, to actually have more bridging of those divides. I think we are very good at saying these are the international standards. These are things that are good for Malaysia because it really raises our, you know, level of well-being, our access to rights, justice. But how do we take it and bridge those divides with the groups or individuals who don't think that these are necessary, right? So I think it's also something that maybe we want to, you know, add to the sophistication of civil society engagement. And that is to say, what do we then do with these values that we have? And sort of say, open up the discussions with the others. It's not going to be easy because, you know, we are quite divided. But again, divided maybe at a limited level. I don't think the division is not a lost cause, I think. but to say that it should be a next step, which is to say, let's bridge this divide. So we cannot let the political elites sort of like set the agenda and become the only patrons of change, right? So it's also the role of civil society together with the media to then say, you know, here's an opportunity for change. How do we bring the different voices in a way that we get used to this culture of debating and not excluding or, you know, discriminating?
Gayathri, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That was Gayathri Venkateswaran, an assistant professor in media and communications at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. After this, we get an insider perspective on this issue. We'll be speaking to Rizal Rozan of Empower. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. Now, earlier we spoke to Gayathri Venkateswaran from the University of Nottingham to talk about the role that civil society organizations should be playing in New Malaysia. Now, for perhaps an insider perspective on this issue, we're crossing over to Rizal Rozan. He's an advocacy officer at Empower Malaysia. Rizal, thanks for joining us.
Hello there. Yes. Thank you for inviting us.
So, So, okay. How ready was civil society for the change in government that happened in GE14?
Well, we can't say that no one saw it coming. Right. There was some hope, and pun intended, that the current government will once and for all end the dominance of previous one. However, in terms of talking about what if Harapan wins the election by civil society and for civil society, this kind of talk, I don't think I've been through any discussion of this nature pre-GE14. And I think it has to do with the civil society's spirits and principles that no matter what party or which party assumes power, human rights or any specific issue they fight for is still number one in the agenda. As Gaya said earlier, right? Civil society, there's a lot of types of civil society in Malaysia at the moment. And their issues are still number one in the agenda. So to answer your question, well, I can say that we can never be ready per se, but definitely there has not been enough serious discussion about the what-ifs in the pre-election period.
Right. And post-election, of course, several big figures in civil society have joined the current government in its reform efforts. On the one hand, this is, of course, a good opportunity, right, for activists mm-hmm. to push for the changes that they've long been advocating. On the other hand, you know, has this kind of raised questions internally within civil society about mm-hmm. how the organizations within it should position themselves in relation to the government to go on keeping the government as well as the opposition in check?
I think one thing to also note here is to think that key players will always change in civil society, so one can never truly change or impact to the point that civil society will lose its significance if it loses one of its key figures. So I feel we need to appreciate that civil society will still come up strongly if their friends, quote unquote, who are currently in the government do not speak the human rights language or even the right language. So we saw that during Port Dickson Move, we saw that in the Women's March demands, i.e. gender wage gap, female genital mutilation, FGM, child marriages, and etc. These are all about what the current government lacks. So even though there are some lining, not like leaning, but it's more towards there are civil society figures who went to government, civil society will remain strong in its agenda. Sure, there has been the intensity of criticism and criticism towards current government might not be as intense as the criticism towards previous government who has been repressive for over 60 years. But don't wait for that to happen, right? Because the spirit of civil society is as such. The more spaces you choose to take away from civil society, the more creative civil society gets. So while there are avenues for diplomatic approach to get things done in Malaysia, it should not take away our freedom of expression. So in the new government, civil society is also learning the ropes. I feel like we're still learning the ropes in terms of working collaboratively with the government, at the same time have some non-negotiables, because human rights is as such. The basic principles of equality, non-discrimination, intersectionality, indivisibility, and living with dignity is non-negotiable. So in fact, this is the lowest threshold or the minimum standard that civil society asks for. So I think in terms of working to get things done, yeah, we are still learning.
Right. And on that note, one of the issues noted in the Civicus report was the rise in right-wing populism globally, which Malaysia seems to be seeing as well. How is civil society dealing with this while continuing to push for reforms as well?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, but I have to complicate the situation because in Malaysia, it's much more complicated. In my observation, this right-wing ideology have even extended their tentacles into civil society. So that's why when Gaia said earlier that we are not homogeneous in terms of the civil society space, it is true because right now there are right-wing groups masking themselves as NGOs but only fighting for like select few rights. So even though their origins are from the previous administration, the masquerade has a few times already been exposed recently for taking extreme stances in things that are non-negotiable, such as provoking the race, religion, and even at times sexuality card, you know. So with this, I call this group hashtag Tak Malu Ke Bosku group, a kind of right-wing group seeping into civil society. I feel like this becomes one component to the multiple burdens for rights-based NGOs to counter the appropriated human rights language, as well as continue awareness raising for the general public. So in this instance, while I admit civil society has to double and triple the amount of effort in terms of outreach, seeing that now human rights narratives are appropriated, the government should step in as well. If they are what they claim they are, i.e. reform government. Yeah? In issues such as child marriage, FGM, and anti-ICERT, for example, we have seen the government using the have we seen the government using their machinery to re-educate the public, to right the wrongs of previous government? They have all the resources, but the thing is why we cannot take all the blame for as civil society, because we're already stretched at the moment in this issue. So the current government also needs to be more human rights champions, a few ministers and backbenchers, MPs alone agreeing to the minimum standards of human rights. That's not enough. So we need more help from the current government as well.
Rizal, in closing, right, it's almost a year now since this big change that we've been talking about. How do you see things moving forward? You know, how do you see, do you think that civil society has settled in a little bit, or will all these renegotiations be continuing?
Oh, definitely these renegotiations will be continuing. When it comes to re-strategizing, to push for reforms, I think, no matter which government they have, human rights are non-negotiable. I think we should not back down from pushing for reforms in Malaysia. But civil society alone are not the only heroes in this reform strategy, I would say. Like, we need the people to be more apt in receiving information and not be gullible when taking in information from groups who are appropriating human rights language, for example. But from that, like I said earlier as well, we need more champions within the government to start speak up and speak out, even if it means to re-educate your own alliance member. Like, for example, just a few weeks ago, we saw people like Fahmi Zainal, the PKR youth chief of Penang, who became the oppressor in the very same issue he was oppressed before, which is the freedom of assembly. You know, and I also like to take the example of Jacinta Ardern. The New Zealand's prime minister, she is the best example in terms of practices for reform government. We need more courageous and more humane and compassionate leader like her in Malaysia. And why I like this example as well is because she dispels the myth that women cannot be leaders because they're emotional. Exactly, in Malaysia, being emotional, compassionate, responsibility as a leader is a very human component that our leadership needs at the moment. So I think I'll close with that.
Rizal, thank you very much for that perspective. That was Rizal Rozan, Advocacy Officer at Empower Malaysia. We have the 7 p.m. news coming up. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.